The following presentation, The Joy of Six, or Real World Rollout of IPv6 at Warwick, was given by Paul Catchpole and Mark Cholton of the University of Warwick at NetWorkshop 42 in April 2014.
Hi there, how are we doing? You all happy? Okay, fair enough. One laugh from the front. Right, this talk is, as it says, about IPv6. I'm not going to tell you what IPv6 is, or in fact, bore you rigid with addressing schemas, or tell you how to get your head around it. This is purely about the University of Warwick's attempt at the start of a rollout. I also ask you to apologise, I've got a bit of a cold still, so if I'm a bit sniffy, hopefully I won't give you the entire room some horrible lurgy. So we've been looking at IPv6 for several years. There's been several talks at NetWorkshop in the past. Some universities seem to have cracked on and got a full rollout done. I don't know how many are thinking it's an irrelevance they don't want to deal with, and some will have lab deployments. Can we have a show of hands? Who's got a fully deployed rollout, all sorted, done, dual stack everywhere, all done? Three or four in the room? Who's not done anything at all? Doesn't care? About a third of the people? Okay. And so are the... yeah. Am I leading the witness? I do apologise. And how many, so the rest have all got sort of a, they've done a bit, you know, you're aware of V6 and there's bits and bobs going on. Test deployments. I notice Leeds have got an IPv6 pilot SSID up on wireless. How's that going?
It's going fine, yes. In fact, to edge room enabled with
dual stack. Okay, cool. That's very good. That's more than we've done. So from the slide, the sideways backwards comment refers to our progress and what progress you might see yourself if you go down the route of trying to make this all happen. We've had bursts of forward progress, quite a bit of sideways thinking about pauses while we think about whether to upgrade equipment, to have a minor panic as to whether we bought equipment that won't do V6 properly, go out to management, ask for more money, that sort of thing. And we've also gone backwards in certain places where we've gone down a route, decided it's the wrong way to implement it, given up and tried again. It's been a very rocky road for us so far, and we haven't got that far down it. But hopefully some of this experience will be valuable so you can avoid some of our mistakes. Communication, there's lots of talk on IPv6 about getting stakeholders involved at the earliest possible stage, and you know, you should immediately, before you type anything on a command line, you should be looking at organising training days and ringing up your server teams and getting them on board, and there's probably some truth in some of that. I will confess that we haven't done much of that at Warwick. We're from the network perspective, slightly more concerned about getting it working at all and in a way that looks like it might be usable. So from our perspective, we want to sort of silently dual stack the network, or a proportion of it, and then at that point, we're quite happy to open up labs and get server teams and other people from the university, from ITS and the wider university involved in trialing it and developing their own services. So how you want to go about that is up to you. Best practice appears to be to involve everyone early on. Our approach is to do it on the quiet. So we'll come back next year and tell you which way worked. Is everyone aware of RFC 1925? Nobody? Anyone aware of what RFC 1925 is? One person. Whee! RFC 1925 is, and given, bearing in mind, the date today is only one day from April the 1st. It's an April Fool's RFC that describes the essential truths of networking. And paragraph 8 there, you can see, is it is always more complicated than you think. And that's certainly been the case, I would say, with V6. We've come across all sorts of strange things that are not necessarily evident from everybody's best practice guide. So it's an aphorism that's proven true. So our network, we're a Cisco house. We've got a Cisco network. It went in 4 or 5 years ago now, replacing Extreme. It's Cisco pretty much everywhere. We've got Fortinet firewalls, Cisco wireless. It's a mix of a Nexus at the core in the data center, Cat6Ks in VSSs for distributions, 3750 stacks. It's fairly recognizable network-shaped network. There's nothing too unusual about it. So we're not talking about some weird edge case, unusual development. It's a pretty standard campus deployment. It's quite big. At the moment, we audited physical ports on the network recently, or infrastructure team did, for a different project, and they came up with somewhere, it's actually just under 100,000 physical ports, physical connections. And that's today. And we seem to be building a new building every 3 weeks at the minute. So our requirements for network estate are growing very, very rapidly. We've, like most of you here, or some of you here probably, we've got a reasonable size IPv4 block. Dual 10 gig Janet connections, so BGP to Janet. We've moved the whole of the residence network. It was publicly addressed, but in an attempt to regain some of our, some sort of 12,000 IPs, we've moved it all to private addressing recently. And that generates issues of NAT and other fun things. I'll mention that later. The wireless network's all private and NATed as well. And both of those two networks run through Cisco SCE, sort of packet shapers if you want to, application inspection engines. We run at the service block, and the network was designed to use multiple routing tables for mostly for security, a little bit for convenience in certain places. We don't overlap addressing on them necessarily, although we could. You might ask why we went down this mad route. You might think that MPLS would have been a more sensible idea in the core. You didn't ask, but I thought somebody might. And this happened because we went in with Nexus at the core 7018s very early on early code, on V4 code, which didn't support MPLS. It barely supported anything. It just about managed IP at the time it went in. So we were stuffed with not being able to run MPLS. So we've got this wonderfully simple multiple VRF, multiple routing tables, and we've got a piece of the network that glues it all together. And that's in the path to the internet, which is relevantly important if you want to route V6 in and out of the network. So is the network complicated? Bits of it are. That diagram is, I've cheated a bit and made it intentionally unreadable to avoid, to just to add mystique to its to the apparent complexity. That's the edge routers to Janet, and that's the service block of the network. The network's in blocks. We have a core block, you know, distribution blocks. This is the service block. It does all of the wireless, all of the inter VRF routing, BGP to Janet, OSPF to the core. It's got the firewalls in the middle of it. This is one of the main pain points for our V6 so far. I'll move on a bit. So, how many minutes have I had? Does that count down the timer rather than up? Okay, just to confuse me. So why bother with the V6 rollout? I said it earlier slightly flippantly. People looked a bit horrified. Are management telling you to do it? Have you run out of V4 space? Who's got a /16 block of V4? Most of you. Cool. Who's run out of it? Completely.
Very nearly,
okay.
Some class C's as well.
You've got some class C's. Oh, some extra class C's outside of the block. So you're tied up against it. How many other people think they'll exhaust their V4/16 soon? Okay, so there's a few. So that may be a good valid reason to start thinking about doing something about it. Of course, the other problem is that the rest of the world doesn't speak V6 necessarily, and all of those lovely sites your customers want to go and talk to probably won't. It's okay if you want to Google or possibly Facebook and probably Microsoft. I assume Cisco's website can be accessed on V6. It definitely can. But not everywhere will. So V4 exhaustion is great, but you may well run into, you know, just dual stacking with V6 isn't going to solve your problems with that. We're about 3/4 of the way exhausted on our /16. Now we've regained ResNet back again. So it's a reason, but it may not be the only reason. And, you know, my personal feeling is 10 years from now, we might be able to run native V6 and expect to be able to access the majority of web servers on the internet. I think it will probably take that long before you can have a V6 native subnet and expect people to use it, say ResNet or wireless or general access. Yeah, I don't know if people agree with that or whether they think I'm mad, but that's, you don't agree at all. You think it'll be what, next year?
A lot of mobile providers are already doing it and they're using NAT 6.1.
Well, yes, I was going to mention that. Well, I am going to mention that on the next slide. But yes, that's a definite way of doing it, absolutely. So yes, there is translation, and NAPPT is the way of doing it, yeah. And then you might have a business need. So it may be management telling you, we're hearing lots of things about this, let's make it happen. It may be that you have, and for us, our main driver is that we've got a couple of departments that are research departments that are saying, we have other universities that are speaking native V6 and we need to talk to them, or we'd like to talk to them. This is our preferred way of doing comms. So for us, even though we can put those departments off for a bit in saying that, well, you know, we're still rolling this out, but that's a background driver for us. That's the reason that we want to get the network up and ready. So for us, this is about readiness. We want to silently ready the network so we have a V6 product that we can roll out to our customers when they ask for it. And we haven't had too much ask yet. But if we leave it till someone asks, it'll be another year down the line by the time we've implemented it. So it does need doing. And there is always PAT, both for your V4 or for translating 6 back into 4 for access to the outside world. We have a mixed relationship with Nat and, in fact, Pat himself. I think the cat's all right, though. But the we've had some fun with our, as I said, we've got our entire wireless NATed. It was NATed on the service layer routers for a while on sub 720s. When they run out of their 128Ks worth of memory they're allowed to use for NAT, they fall over very quickly, taking your entire network down with them, in our case. So we do get bitten with these things a little bit. So we're very wary of using excessive amounts of NAT if we can possibly avoid it. If you wanted to know, the NAT's actually done on the Fortinets now, and it works without falling over, which is good. We still get residence users occasionally moaning about access to like Xbox Live games that are also hosted behind NAT on the other end. So even though they do stun, there's a certain, it tends to go wrong if both ends are behind NAT. So we get students who complain about that. That's our main pain since moving the residence network to private addressing. So anyway, so NAT is something that, yeah, we're aware of. We'd quite like to avoid it if humanly possible, in any possible situation. But yes, you're bang on right. It's a solution where that you can run native V6 and get to V4 hosts. So what approach do you want to take? What sort of assault are you going to? If you think, some people say, right, okay, we'll knock up we'll bring up a lab subnet. It'll run Slack, it'll address itself. But it's not going to get to the outside world because it can't get through the rest of our fearsomely complicated network and out. Some people think, okay, we'll start at the other end. Let's work on our edge routers. Let's get our peering with Janet sorted, get it up first. And then we'll work backwards into the network. Worry about the firewalls, worry about the next things. Are you going to phone a friend? Are you going to ring your support people up? I'm not mentioning names. I don't know if anyone knows who our support, our gold partner is, please don't tell them. We phoned them up and said, do you want to be involved in a V6 project? They said, possibly. And then a little bit later, our sales executive phones up and said, actually, we don't want to be involved. If you've got a problem, open a ticket, but we don't want to help you with your rollout. So we didn't necessarily get as much support as we would have perhaps liked on that. So we're going it alone, pretty much. So yeah, you know, you've got to think about how you're going to do it. Are you going to do it fully supported? Have you got someone who's going to design a solution for you? Are you going to make it up yourself? Are you going to follow the Janet best practice guide, which is very helpful? You know, make a decision. Do you need one of those? That, by the way, is a Red Fox Labrador with a lion's mane on it. The barman did say you can't leave that lion there. Sorry. do you need a lab? Are you going to try and do everything in the lab? You're going to have a fully functioning lab. Can you lab your? Can you replicate your entire network, your whole data center, something relevant, and test? And our feeling on it is you can do a very small amount of this in the lab. You can do tiny bits of it in segments, not as a whole. Unless you've got a lab the size of your main network, we find it very hard to replicate a full Nexus core distribution, some data center stuff, some sensible routing to the outside world, a bit of firewall. If we did that, the lab would be worth more than the building. So we use the lab for isolated testing of configurations and little proof of concepts. Then we go and do it on the main network. The main network is our lab for this. And the two arrows, the two green arrows, just indicate that we're implementing from both the outside in and the inside out at the same time. So I've been working on outside of the network, through the firewalls, in through the service layers towards the core. Mark has been working on going from edge and distribution and heading back up to the core. And hopefully we'll meet in the middle at some point. So I'm going to get on and move on before I get shot by our people in charge. That's a Arusa, as you probably recognise. I know what one of those is. That connects us to Janet. It wasn't particularly difficult. Janet were incredibly helpful. Open a ticket with Janet, say, we'd like to do V6, please, thanks, and BGP would be great. And they'll say, here's your addressing, just make it happen, no problem. And you'll put an RFC in, do it, and it'll work first time. And you won't worry about it, it's great. The only thing you might run into, we ran into on 12.2, on our 12.2, is VRRP. VRRP V2, which is standard pretty much, doesn't support V6 addressing. VRRP V3 does, but you can't do it on 12.2, you need 15 odd. So HSRP, auto magic, one line of configuration on your interface, and HSRP is up and running. I know it's proprietary, and I know we try and avoid it, but sometimes needs must. We're also running, because our 7600 has been around for a while, and the config's been around since the dawn of time, NLRI old school BGP config. You can't do V6 in that, because you can't do address families. Auto magic command, BGP upgrade CLI, do it on the live router. Don't put an RFC on, do it on a Friday afternoon if you're feeling like living on the edge. It just works. It doesn't bite anything, it won't bounce the peer relationships, it just works. Just rewrites the config. Firewalls, just works. Fortinet, turn it on, address it, forget about it. In a cluster, no problems. There is a caveat, which is that we don't use much of the UTM feature set, application inspection, and that sort of thing. So, you know, your mileage might vary with that. But in terms of pure routing, pure policies, no problem at all. There's a switch in the command line that says, show me V6 options in the GUI. Do it from the GUI, no problem. Away you go. The only other caveat is a caveat for HSRP. HSRP, when you bring it up on Cisco, uses an IPv6 local address for its gateway address, the virtual address. Fortinets can't ping them from the interface on the Fortinet. Yeah, I know you're groaning over there, I can see you. So that makes troubleshooting. So immediately you'll do it and you think this doesn't work. If you ping past it, you'll find out it does work. And your static route that you've put on, or your route that you've put on your Fortinet to the default, to this virtual, you know, virtual local address, it does work. It just doesn't look like it. Our service layers, they're the big white diagram, thoroughly complex and confusing. Again, we ran into VRRP. These boxes do OSPF to the core, they do some static routing up to the firewall, they do all of our wireless, they have all of the VRF inter-routing, which is done in BGP, loop-backed between the VRFs on the box. They don't have any BGP relationships outside. So there's a bit of complexity to work on. This is what we're working on at the moment. They're already running RS15. You can change to VRRP V3 should you be brave enough to do so by typing that magic command, FHRP version VRRP V3. If you do that, it will unconfigure your VRRP V2, which, if you're doing this on the live network, might well cause you some problems. It will does. And getting change management approval to reboot our service layers is something that needs more than one CAB meeting. So, and possibly a wait till the next university holiday. This is what I mean about going backwards and sideways and pausing. The rollout can take forever for change management, sensible reasons. So HSRP is in place again. BGP, again, we're running new config, no problem there, but these are per VRF address families. So we need an address family V6. We define them with the IPVRF command to start with. You discover that you can't put a V6 address family on that. You need to define them as VRF definition. Now, if you want to do this live, you can. Cisco's manual says, just unconfigure the VRF. Start with no IPVRF campus network. If you try that, you'll discover it un-V4 addresses all of your subints and everything else that's in that VRF. So that's quite fun. Buried in the MPLS documentation, in a completely irrelevant subsection that has nothing to do with anything, is the command VRF upgrade CLI multi-AF mode common policies. Doing that is like the BGP one. It just works. It's a magic lifesaver for that sort of situation. So throw that on. I did it live on one of our main service layers and it didn't break anything. No problem at all. So there are some solutions. OSPF V3, does it work alongside V2? It looks like it in the lab. It does, thank you very much. So I'll tell you next week when I've implemented it, but it's, it should be fine. Our DNS and DHCP, with Blue Cat IP address management. IP address management works fine, all the latest software versions. DNS just works. I mean, DNS is a bit magic in V6. I'm not gonna belabor the point, I'm running out of time as it is. We've got, you can obviously have your DNS servers on V4 and answering quad A records for V6, no problem at all. You can, the Blue Cat kit will run, it's just latest bind, so it'll run up interfaces on V6 and answer on V6. The biggest problem with DNS is clients. Clients have a habit of choosing to, each client, even application layer behavior for what happens when they get an answer to a query that is a V6 address. varies application to application and OS to OS. So knowing what your dual stack client's going to do when it gets an answer that's v6, will it actually try and connect, if it gets v4 and v6 for a web server, will it go away and talk on v4? Will it default to v6? Will it do something else? Will it not work at all? You can get bitten by that, and I think we will get bitten by it at some point. DHCP, we are using DHCP v6. We're not using stateless autoconf for anything. We need order stability. We can't have machines dreaming up their own addresses. It sounds a great idea, but it terrifies us. Think about any of these things. We haven't really yet. That's an SCE in the top left. The thing, the stuff on the right is Mitel IP phone kit. I'm not allowed to show a photo of that thing at the bottom, but I put it on anyway. That's a pair of our fibre taps that are in line on our main Janet links. Half the university doesn't know we've got them, but I'm sure you can all keep a secret. They do now, is that? Yeah. And now, Mr. Mark Charlton. So I've waffled rather a lot and left him a short period of time to talk, which he's probably eternally grateful for.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Oh, right, we're going to rush through this. I popped over to the computer science department here earlier because I heard they had a UDP packet dispensing machine, but it was out of order. Thank you. Very, very quick run through of some of the bits we've upgraded. The core, as Paul said, is Nexus 7018s, dual supervisor, redundant ring. We really like these because they upgrade painlessly. We took them, we're now running code 6.1, which was the latest when we got it. And it just sits there, they work day after day. And as far as IP6 is concerned, at the moment, we've had no issues at all. At some point, we're gonna have to put an awful lot of links on them that goes everywhere, but we'll worry about that a bit later on. Distribution, mostly VSS pairs. If you're not sure about VSS, it's basically two switches that think as one. And Cisco have this wonderful feature called ISSU, which is a software upgrade that lets you upgrade half at a time, and with certain tweaks, it'll all behave painlessly and people won't notice any outages. Doesn't work going to version 15. Cisco will happily send you an enormous spreadsheet of versions and what you can go from and to and how they work and whether they're painless. And that one isn't, so we've basically got 2.5 minutes of outage every time we upgrade a pair. But we've just got one of those done, so hopefully we have a process now, so we'll get on with those. The data centres, we're using the Nexus again, but unfortunately they're not resilient, they don't have dual supervisors running VRRP, and at some point we've got to bite the bullet and upgrade those. We're also using the Nexus 5Ks, 2Ks, and we know there are some things there that will bite us, that software upgrades need downtime on the blades. So that's another. The access layer, well, you know that that's going to be painful when you upgrade them. Again, we've gone to version 15 on the code to give us the features we want from IPv6. And of course, you need to reboot to do a memory reallocation. That is done in most places now. We did it as part of our normal, we do an annual upgrade of the access layer, and we did it as part of that, so that's carried on. The problems we've found, there are just so many documents you can see. A small selection that I dug out, yes, that is the Janet one hiding under the O'Reilly book, probably one of the most useful documents, actually, because it's based on real world. Getting all the code and finding out what versions of code we should be running, and it's not actually available yet, but we've announced it. That's a real pain. The training courses that I've been on have said, you'll be doing this on the Greenfield site, won't you? No, as most people won't, so we've had to deal with that. The addressing scheme that we haven't even got round to yet, but we've had some ideas, but that's for later. Remembering not to subnet the network, and as Paul said, we're having to go to HSRP rather than VRRP, we think. A few of the things that we don't know whether they're ready for IPv6 or not yet. Hopefully they are, but it's something we need to work on and we'll get to it. Another quote from the network truths thing. Definitely. But trying to explain to management that it's actually incredibly complicated to roll out across an entire network is rather difficult. Okay. We haven't got time, I dare say, for questions.
I'll give you one.
One?
Yes.
Make it a good one.
Right, has anyone got one exciting question? Right at the back. The student's going to run around and... You're going to get a microphone.
Hold that thought.
It saves them on gym membership this week.
With the layer 2 upgrade, did you have any resourcing issues with the change in any SDN templates?
Not that we're aware of, no. It's
it's
just worked, basically. No one has come back and said, oh, so-and-so was broken or whatever.
We probably don't have it. We certainly won't hit any of the CAM, MAC table limits or ACL limits for V6 on those, or V4. I mean, by reducing our V4 availability with the SDN prefer V6 template, we will reduce that, but we have not. We're nowhere near the limits of the 3750Xs anyway. So yeah, we haven't been bitten by it at all. We're doing it as best practice, really. I mean, the thing about layer 2 is that people think, oh well, you know, my lab 3500XL from 10 years ago, well, that'll do V6. There's no problem, and it will. It'll switch V6 packets all day long. But do you want the edge security features? You know, is your network using port security? Is it using DHCP snooping and all that good stuff? If it is, then you want an edge. You want the edge parity. You want the stuff in V6 as well. You don't want V6 to become a massive, security vulnerability in your network, and it's got good potential to become it. If it isn't already with auto tunneling, that's a different topic for another day. Okay.
Can I say thank you very much to Mark and Paul? Catch the motor.
This recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.